Welcome to NGA Notable Lectures, a podcast offering a deeper understanding of all things artistic. Dedicated to Edgar Degas, 1834 to 1917, in the centennial year of his death, Volume 3 of the Conservation Division's biennial journal, Factor, Conservation, Science, Art History, focuses on the tremendous wealth of works by Degas in the National Gallery of Art collection. The first to feature the work of a single artist, this issue includes essays by conservators, scientists, and curators. It presents insights into Degas' working methods in painting, sculpture in wax, and bronze, and works on paper, as well as a sonnet he wrote to his Little Dancer. The gallery has the third largest collection in the world of work by Degas, comprising 21 paintings, 65 sculptures, 34 drawings, 40 prints, 2 copper plates, and 1 volume of soft ground etchings. Its extensive Degas holdings and conservation resources have inspired not only groundbreaking gallery exhibitions, such as Degas the Dancers, 1984, Degas at the Races, 1998, Degas Little Dancer, 2014, and Degas Cassette, 2014, but also exhibitions around the world. For the public symposium, held as a centenary tribute on September 22, 2017, Anne Pinjot presented an impossible interview with Degas, posing her own questions with a male voice, responding with authentic quotes from the artist.
How dares anyone interview you? You would think, like the philosopher René Descartes, bene vixit, bene qui latuit. He who goes unnoticed lives when? Ovid.
I would like to be famous and unknown.
Even if it means falling out with people who don't abide by your wish? Georges Augustus Saint-Gaudens paid the price when he published Degas, The Painter of Modern Life, in 1890.
Those people catch you in bed, they take off your shirt, they toss you into the street, and when you complain, they tell you you belong to the public.
Do you find art criticism useless?
With one line, we painters say more than a hack says in a volume.
Is that why you answered your friend Paul Lafont?
Is painting made to be seen? It's private life, that.
The young Julie Manet described your fit of anger in 1895.
Oh, critics. They're the ones in charge nowadays. Painting belongs to them.
2 years later, are you changing your mind?
Ah, men of letters, why are they meddling in it? We do justice to ourselves so well. Oh my God. People crowding around our pictures, but why? Are they crowds in a chemist's laboratory? A chemist works in peace. Us, we belong to everyone. What a torture.
What a torture for me, because this don't work. Yes. Will you change your mind over time?
There is something shameful about being well known, particularly by people who don't understand you. So big a reputation is a kind of ignominy.
So it offends you to try and take a conversation from you, as Maupassant wrote in Bel Ami, before the word interview prevailed with its inaccuracy. What are the reasons for your turning in on yourself? Can it be explained by your childhood? As the eldest son, motherless, at the age of 13, did you feel responsible for your 4 surviving brothers and sisters? Achille, Ships and Signs, 1864. Thérèse, who married Duke Achille Morbilli in 1863. The successive portraits of his sister Thérèse constitute a veritable family chronicle, wrote Henri Loiret. No doubt Degas particularly liked the ingress aspect of this phase. Marguerite, the prettiest, the cleverest, the one who had everything going for her and had just a mediocre life, always Loiret. In 1865, she married the architect Henri Fèvre. René, your young brother, was the only one to survive you. You drew him when you were 19, is a drawing just sold at Christie from Arlette Neveu Degas. You painted him when you were 21, is the famous the Smith College Museum. Was it to them that you devoted your sensitivity?
The heart is a tool that goes rusty if it doesn't work. Is it possible to be an artist without the heart? What bad luck it must be not to have a heart you can trust in your family.
Your father would have preferred law studies and accepts your taste for painting, but worries. Our little Raphael is always working away, but has yet to complete anything. In 1866, when he was 21, René settled in Louisiana, where he marries his cousin, Orr's widow, Estelle Musson, in 1869. You are going to America to stay with them from October 1872 to March 1873.
I didn't speak English and knew nothing about how to travel in America. So I obeyed him. What a lot of foolish things I'd have done without him there. What a good thing the family is.
Achille
and René are associates. I'm writing to you in their office, not paper. They are making quite a lot of money here and are in a position that is really rare for their age. People like them and they are highly regarded, and I'm very proud of that.
It did not last. Why did you agree to pay a part of their debts, which led to the failure of your father's bank in 1874, the year he died in Naples? In 1875, your brother Achille, on the left, fired a pistol at the Paris Stock Exchange, something to do with a love affair. In 1878, after ruining your family, your brother René, on the right, deserted his blind wife and their five children and married another woman. Your uncle Musson wrote to his brother, "The bank is selling off Fèvre and Edgar Furniture in Paris. I see Edgar dying without everything, living on as little as possible. Fèvre's children are dressed in rags." You reply to the baritone Jean-Baptiste Faure, who is waiting his orders.
"Your pictures would have been finished a long time ago if I didn't have to do something every day to earn some money. You know about all the different problems that are overwhelming me."
Where Italy is concerned, that dream Italy of 1858, was your family more supportive?
Naples is the place to go to become rejuvenated and love life. Even the sun is in love with Naples. Everything is happy and easy.
Having taken refuge in Florence, the Bellelli side of your family offered you the chance to produce a masterpiece.
I have two young cousins to gaze at. The eldest is truly a little beauty. The younger one has the spirits of a little devil and the kindness of a little angel. I'm painting them in their black dresses and little white pinafores, which really suit them.
Will you always enjoy going back to Italy?
Well, a lot of time is wasted fighting over the bankruptcy of his poor name. So I am in Naples with my brother Achille to get our Neapolitan creditors to sign a certificate which has been dragging on for 6 months, June 1876.
Has your bitterness calmed down 10 years later?
All I am here and now is an embarrassing Frenchman. Interest and sentiment are at loggerheads in me in a strange way, and I don't really know how to defend myself on these two points. Family is what divides you the most.
So you see the Palazzo de Gas in Naples. Knowing that you have financial problems, why do you have so many homes? You invite Alexis Rouard.
A small housewarming evening at 21 Rue Pigalle, in the most beautiful third floor apartment there is in the whole neighborhood.
What did you announce in April 1890?
The Ingres Hotel has moved to 23 Rue Balue,
the address where Zola had lived. While still hanging on to Rue Balue, you arrive at 37 Rue Victor Massé. The concierge explains, sleeping on the second floor, eating on the third, working on the fourth. How do you pay so much rent? Does your dealer, Paul Durand-Ruel, play the part of a banker?
Tomorrow, please be kind enough to bring me my rental terms. There is one more rent to pay this time around for Rue La Rochefoucauld, which I'm leaving. Ah, I'm going to stuff you with my works this winter, and you, for your part, will stuff me with money. It's far too boring and humiliating to go running after 100 sous coins the way I do. Maybe both of us will make our fortunes just when we no longer need them. So be it.
Your rents are considerable. Why don't you follow Ambroise Vollard's advice? Monsieur Degas, it would be so easy for you to get all the money you would like. You only have to half open your drawing pads.
You know how it bothers me to sell, and how I'm always hoping to manage to do better.
The worst is to come. The destruction in 1912 of the building of Rue Victor Massé, where you lived for 22 years, and the urgent need for new lodgings. You are 78. Your model, the fearsome Maria Suzanne Valadon, finds you an apartment at 6 Boulevard de Clichy, where Mary Cassatt had lived. From that moment...
I haven't worked since my move. It's odd. I haven't put anything away. Everything is still there, against the walls. I don't care. I'm leaving everything. It's surprising with age the way one becomes indifferent.
Did you used to like traveling? In 1868, Eugène Manet prize the merit of London to you. Manet, I am all for testing out the ground over there. There may be an outlet for our works. What did you ask Tissot in September 1871?
They tell me you are making lots of money, so give me the figures. Give me an idea about how I might also take some advantage of England.
You will go there next month. Has the dealer anew given you any advice?
Here, Durand-Ruel attracts me by his devotion and swears to me that he wants everything I produce. But Agnew greatly intrigues me. I've talked without thinking too much with one or two people, and what I've been told about him is extremely beautiful. People are begging me to put myself in his formidable hands.
Are you going to cross the Atlantic? What is your first impression of the new world?
It's England in a better mood.
It's Tissot again. From you, right, from New Orleans.
I'm working away on a major picture designed for Agnew and which he, himself, should sell in Manchester. Because if ever a cotton spinner wanted to find his painter, he'd better snap up me up fast.
We previously saw your brothers as nonchalant visitors, Achille leaning on his elbow on the left, René seated reading the newspaper. They are wine importers, and their speculations would be ill-fated. 17 years later, and see Europe,
I'm still thinking about the trip to Madrid and a real bullfight. Should I get that flashy foreigner, Baldini, to come along? Will Lafont follow? Will I myself have the courage not to return immediately to Paris without laying my life even more bare?
Because your friend Albert Bartholomé let you down at the last minute, and because Lafont did not follow, it was in fact the painter Giovanni Baldini who went with you. Your denigration of him does not stop you admiring his pastel portrait of Verdi.
There's not a modern artist who could do that.
Verdi, vieni, vieni. Eccolo. After 18 hours in the train from Irun to Madrid, you go straight to the Prado.
Nothing can give you any inkling about Velázquez.
That is your belief.
The secret is to follow the advice that the masters give you through their works, by doing something other than what they are doing.
The Ingres episodes are too well known to be mentioned here. Even so, you hunted down his work less ferociously than those of Ingres, always Loirette. Did you meet Eugène Delacroix?
He had his collar turned up and a scarf around his neck. He was walking fast, fast. I see him stepping off the pavement, crossing the road at a brisk pace, and just as hastily stepping onto the other pavement.
At the evening workshop in the Villa Médicis, you probably meet the painter Gustave Moreau, his self-portrait, 8 years older than you. He was your mentor in Italy. What did you write to him about Florence in September 1858?
I see that to have news of you, one must ask for it. You will not realize that I am reading the Lettre Provinciale with interest, where the self is commended as detestable. I used to have your encouragement. How I miss it.
Here are the portraits by Gustave Moreau de Degas aux Offices. and in November 1858.
Do like when I rub myself like a bear against your shoulder, to say loud and clear that I understood you.
Do you still have good relations with Gustave Moreau, who keeps your photograph in his album?
The hermit?
Yes.
Who knows the time schedules of the trains?
Yes.
Well, he's a painter who wanted to make us believe that gods wear watch chains.
What did you say when he asked you, "So, you are claiming to restore art through dance?"
And you, are you claiming to revive it through jewelry?
Despite this detachment, your friends, in addition to your work, have been the happiness of your life. At the Louis Le Grand Lycée, where you were a boarder for 8 years, you met the most faithful of them, they are also amateur painters. Henri Rouart, industrialist, art lover, cropping up as an artillery captain during the siege of Paris. You mutually fund each other's total nationalism, according Jacques-Émile Blanche. Henri Febvre, your architect brother-in-law, built his mansion Rue de Lisbonne, and his brother Alexis Rouza at the number 36 in 1871. Inside, paint rules the building, as well as its spirits. The poet here, Henri Rouart. The poet Paul Valéry remembers the dinners. Every Friday, Degas, faithful, sparkling, and intolerable.
Fridays are for Rouart, my dear Paulin. I never miss one.
On 21 May 1919, at Saint-Honoré-des-Laux, Ernest, one of the four sons of Henri Rouart, married Julie Manet. And Paul Valéry married Jenny Gobillard, his cousin. Did you have something to do with that? In April 1899, taking Julie Manet by the arm, what did you tell her?
A young man to marry.
Julie, I turned round and saw Ernest Rouart and had a laugh with me. That is an intimidating way of being introduced. Alexis' death in 1911 and Henry's in 1912 left a permanent void in your life.
They were touching, they pampered me when I was a bachelor.
You will always be single. Paul Valpinson was born the same year as you. Your father were friends. At his home, you admire the pictures by Ingres. You watched Hortense, his daughter, grow up. What did you call her?
Little Brioche.
Later on, she explained your relations with her father. Anxious, Degas, not very sure of himself, indecisive, and unsatisfied, needed at his side a vigorous friend in good health and well-balanced. That hypersensitive young man, always on edge, but hiding it beneath a scathing appearance, was touched by the slightest attentiveness. His friend's attentions did not leave him indifferent.
Come, I need you.
What whim caused you to record your respective weights? 94 kilos for Paul Valpinson.
I weighed 64.5 kilos.
In 1884, at her Ménil-Hubert estate, Mrs. Paul Valpinson teased you.
Well, you're not doing anything with Hortense, said her mother. So, Wu, do you want to do something with her? And I started to work on her, a large bust with arms, using clay mixed with some small pebbles. Her family followed that work more out of curiosity than emotion. In the end, one only has fun with that which one doesn't know.
The famous letter, the guy with the croquis of the bust. Are you going to accept the invitation from Ludovic Halévy, who is waiting for you in Dieppe?
But that bust, so you don't think it matters? If I give up on it, it will be lost.
It will be lost. What kind of melancholy assailed you during your treatment at Cauterets in 1888 to make you write to Halévy?
Write me a word, my dear friend, to dispel my boredom, instruct me, and please me.
Did its son, Daniel, become your favorite correspondent?
Say hello to your family, for whom you're becoming the scribe, easy to read, which I appreciate.
Did you stay close to his parents?
Write to me a little. All the light.
Or Louise.
It was indeed the Halévy with
although happy, or vice versa.
So, why was your violent anti-Semitism unleashed during the Dreyfus affair, whereas the Halévy family was so dear to you? How did Drummond's articles in the Libre Parole and your dinners with Jeep, pseudonym of the Comtesse de Martel, fed your raving to that degree? What did you say in 1908 at the deathbed of Ludovic, whom you had not seen for 11 years?
Light, all the light. It was indeed the Halévy we'd always known, with that added grandeur that death gives. It's important to keep that.
Why did you drove your friend face? Why Daniel Halévy have to go looking for Paul Renoir to paint his father's funeral portrait? The life of your old friend Albert Bartholomé was just published by Thérèse Burolet with Artena this year. As Richard told, in 1890 in Burgundy, you travel 372 miles with him in a cabriolet drawn by a white horse.
If I were the lunatic who thought up that trip, Bartholomé was the wise man who ended up making it happen.
Your life's whole occupation was to be found in the fruits of your gaze, observed Daniel Halévy.
I like omnibuses. You can watch people. We made for watching each other, aren't we?
Et à Évariste de Valerne,
you'll see a rather lugubrious contraption over my eyes. They're trying to improve my eyesight by covering the right eye and letting the left eye only see through a slit. Everything is fine. I can still get about quite well, but I can't get into working.
You also need music. What lament did you issue from the New Orleans?
The absence of opera was really painful.
Do you see women as anything else but the others?
Think of a treatise about ornament for women or by women, based on their way of observing, combining and filling their toilet, and everything else. Every day, more than men, they compare 1,001 things that are visible for everyone.
Are you defending yourself?
Ha ha! Women won't forgive me for that. They hate me. They feel that I am disarming them. I show them, without their coquetry, the state of animals cleaning themselves.
Janio asks, do you think they don't like you?
I'm sure they don't. They sense that I'm the enemy. Fortunately, because if they liked me, I'd be finished.
You admit as much nonetheless.
Perhaps I've regarded women too much like animals.
Specialized female animals, adds Paul Valéry, dance, laundry, streets, which isn't not helped by this assertion.
The principal charm of women is their ability to listen.
Or this one.
Women have their good points when we are no longer worth anything.
So you have devoted yourself, ourselves to art. You use more and more forms, monotypes, sculptures, photographs, with the research wonderfully explored by Facture Volume 3, and proclaim a single belief.
Art is a convention. The word art implies the notion of artifice. Art is vice. Art is dishonest and cruel.
And you point to the straight and narrow way to attain it.
Aren't all beautiful things made of renunciation?
This is a portrait de Degas by Maurice Denis, not very famous, in Saint-Germain-en-Laye. What is your destiny? In 1872, you announced to the Danish painter Lawrence Frölich,
art does not broaden, it contains itself. To produce good fruit, you must make yourself into an espalier. You stay there all your life, arms outstretched, mouth open, to assimilate what's passing, what's around you, and live on that.
And Janio, who is in front of you in the photograph, records your words.
In the end, we know nothing, neither where we come from, nor where we're going. So why try to shed light on a mystery that nobody has yet managed to get to the bottom of, because it is apparently impenetrable?
A terrifying last picture around 1915 from Jean Febvre. We haven't penetrated yours, but we still have your works. You are buried in the family vault in Montmartre Cemetery alongside the sumptuous Potocka Chapel. That is the Chapel to Potocka here and the Degas tomb here. You once said, I don't want any speeches. Then?
Yes, Forain, you will make a speech. You will say, he really liked to draw.
There were no speeches, and you will have to forgive mine.
This has been a National Gallery of Art podcast.